thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Andrew's in the studio with us now. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
What are we talking about today besides the brackets?
That's right. Big day.
Yeah, that's right.
So get all your work done before noon.
Yeah.
That way you can enjoy the tournament the rest of the day.
Yeah, yeah. Or just pretend to work. Have that boss switch on your computer. So.
That's right. Ben, so every year the taxpayer advocate releases a report to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically they set forth the 20 most serious problems facing taxpayers.
Huh, okay.
So the National Taxpayer Advocate, for those that don't know, is an independent organization within the IRS which ensures that taxpayers are treated fairly and that they know their rights and understand, you know, what they can do with the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's Congress knew that the IRS has so much power that they wanted to create another arm to basically arm the taxpayers. And their mission is two-pronged. The first one is to provide individual help mm-hmm. to taxpayers. So if you're a taxpayer who's suffering from financial hardship, or you believe that there's an IRS procedure that's not working as it should, you can enlist the help of the taxpayer advocate. It's a free service, and see if they can help get to the bottom of the problem
right.
or the issue.
Okay.
And then the second thing they do is look at the big picture and offer systemic changes that they recommend for Congress to make with regards to the IRS. And that's part of this 20 serious problems that they, by law, are supposed to identify each year.
Mm-hmm.
And so just recently in the last 2 weeks, the National Taxpayer Advocate's Office has put out these 20 problems, and I thought it might be interesting just to go over some of the problems that they addressed.
Okay.
Because it's stuff that we see, you know, even when us practitioners are dealing with the service, there's mm-hmm. issues that we run into. And the first one that we deal with is that taxpayers are having problems getting the right tax advice at the right time.
And of course,
that's pretty broad. But what it basically means is that due to short staffing and the like, the IRS only answers tax law questions during filing season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been going on since 2014. And so the issue becomes is that you're doing things during the year.
Yeah.
Businesses are taking action.
Right.
Individuals are taking action. And they may want to understand, hey, if I buy this, if I exchange this, if I sell this asset,
mm-hmm.
you know, what are my potential tax ramifications of that? And, you know, if it's not filing season, the IRS is not going to provide any type of guidance with regards to those types of mm-hmm. of issues. And so one of the things they're asking for is expand this service, expand the right to ask general tax questions to the IRS at
okay.
any point during the year. Another one is that, you know, it's interesting, Ben, because of the Freedom of Information Act, the IRS has to put forth their manuals, has to put forth their guidance,
mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, they have to be an open book is basically the best way to put it. And so one of the issues that the taxpayer advocates address is they believe that the Office of Chief Counsel, who's the lawyers within this side of the IRS, mm-hmm. is being more and more secretive with regards to their...
Imagine that. Huh?
Yeah, to what they put forth. And the way they do it is that they may send an email versus sending a memo.
Oh.
And the memo becomes public, the email doesn't.
Oh,
and there's
okay.
some issues with that. But I think this is a good lesson to learn for our taxpayers because, you know, when we talk about issues such as penalty abatement, Ben, you know, there's an Internal Revenue Manual that goes step-by-step what an IRS employee is looking at with
okay.
regards to whether, you know, whether abatement is going to be allowed or not.
Hmm.
And so, you know, they're giving you the information, and it's important for the taxpayers to use it or find assistants who
yeah.
can use that manual to help solve their problem.
Like you read them. I mean,
exactly.
A lot of people don't.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's go to Earl in Morehead City with a question. Hi, Earl. How are you?
Yes, thank you. I had a question about, I guess it's called qualified charitable distribution.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, this is for my contribution to church. I would just send money out of my net, you know, checking account.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm told that there's an advantage of doing a when I get my distribution from my IRA to do a send the money, have them send the money to the church rather than doing it. And there's some tax advantage for that. Is that true?
Yeah, so the big question, Earl, becomes whether or not you need that required minimum distribution as part of your income. So one of the ways you can do it is divert some of that required minimum distribution directly to the charity. And what happens is, right, is that money does not have to then be put into your taxable income. It's not a part of your income at all. You don't get the deduction for giving the money, but it lowers the amount of taxable income that you have.
It's like a credit.
Yeah. It's basically a way to just divert your required minimum distribution so you don't have to include it in income and then take a deduction. So the way it works is, you're exactly right, Ben. I mean, you take a dollar-for-dollar reduction of your taxable income, mm-hmm, versus just getting a charitable deduction, which is just the percentage of tax that's owed. So, Earl, I mean, I would say, you know, your big question would become, you know, do you rely upon, you know, that income, or do you want to just divert whatever you're normally giving to the charity, tell your advisor, hey, look, I want 30% of my required minimum distribution, or, you know, 50% or whatever it may be that you normally give to the church, and just know that then that amount wouldn't have to be put in income.
Is that
for
the
you.
IRA administrator, whoever is administering that
correct
account?
Okay. Yeah, and it can go directly to the church.
So the net to me is that it's less tax on me. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So instead of taking the money and putting it in income and then giving the money to the church and taking a deduction, that money just never gets put in income for you.
And
all right, I've heard that, and I just couldn't quite get my head wrapped around it.
Yeah, and the good news about it is that under the new tax law, that's still good law. So that's okay. You know, nothing changed with regards to the Tax Cut and Job Act and with that provision.
Okay, that's good news.
Thank you,
Earl.
Yeah.
So instead of taking the deduction, yeah, so it's a better deal. Generally,
it can be, yeah, and mm-hmm, it just depends. You know, you need to look at what your amount is. But I mean, I do agree with you, Ben. I mean, the fact that you're not having to put that money in income first, mm-hmm, and then take the deduction, a lot of times it is a better bet. It's a better deal because, mm-hmm, it's almost like it works like a credit, like we say, potentially. So it's something that, you know, I encourage Earl to run the numbers on it. I mean, a lot of times, you mm-hmm know, the good thing about these software prep programs and everything else is you can kind of play around with it and see, okay, well, if I do this next year, what would be the effect?
Right.
You know, if I take that required minimum distribution or the percentage amount that I'm going to give to the church and I take that off of my income, where does that leave me? Because now I'm not going to have the charitable deduction. The other thing I'll say to Earl is, and this is a good point in bringing up the new tax law, is a lot of people aren't itemizing their deductions. Mm-hmm. Because you have this new standard deduction. And so in that sense, Ben, this giving the required minimum distribution or a portion thereof directly to charity is almost a no-brainer, because that way you're lowering your amount of income, and right, you weren't going to take the deduction anyways because you're not rising to the level of itemizing your deductions. So, you know, that all plays into the factor, and probably a lot more people are going to be looking into this because they're not itemizing their,
yeah, exactly,
itemizing their deductions.
Yeah. All right.
So that's another good point to bring up, and whether or not it would, you know, be beneficial.
What's another IRS reform or suggestion there?
Yeah. So
and recap, who is this from now?
This is so the list that I'm going over is just from the National Taxpayer Advocate Office.
Okay.
So it's the one, they're the arm of the IRS for the taxpayer. And these are just problems and issues that they've seen regarding, you know, IRS rules and regulations that could be improved.
Uh-huh.
And okay, one of them is and this is interesting, is that the IRS lacks a coordinated approach to its oversight of return preparers. So individuals that prepare tax returns, whether it be, right, an accountant, CPA. And the bottom line is this, is the IRS has been trying to regulate return preparation for a long time. They just keep losing in court. You know, they want to charge fees to be a return preparer. They want to, you know, have you have to take a certain amount of continuing education, such as we lawyers, right, have to do.
Right.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is that they just keep losing in court trying to do this. But I think it's important to know that return preparation is something that's not heavily regulated. And so for our listeners out there, you know, be careful. as to who you get to do your tax preparation for you. Because there's a lot of fly-by-night operations out there that are here one minute, gone the next.
That's right.
And, you know,
it's such a moving target.
You can really get yourself in trouble, and I'd say especially with the new tax law. I mean, you know, here we are. We're in 2018 tax return preparation season. We've got a brand new tax law that's before us. You know, and if the person didn't receive, you know, let's say they've been preparing returns for years and years and years, and they're just used to doing the same old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may not understand the new rules, may not understand the new requirements that are under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. So, you know, it's important for, you know, our listeners to understand that this is not a very highly regulated industry, and be careful who you choose to prepare your return. And if a deal sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Well, remember, there was a survey a couple of years ago that says they called the IRS with the same question over and over and over again and got lots of different answers. So even their folks have to be well trained.
That's right. Yeah, exactly right. And then a lot of the stuff revolved around audits, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the issues becomes, you know, the audit rates are lower, mm-hmm. but the IRS is moving towards more correspondence type audits, meaning that you don't get that personal contact with an individual at the IRS. You're mailing documents back
right.
and forth.
Right.
And the response time,
they've gone
you
to
know,
snail mail.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. yeah. Response times, 65 days for the IRS to respond was the average time to something that you sent forth. You know, 42% never had contact with an IRS employee during these correspondent audits. Mm. So it's just important, you know, have someone out there that can assert your rights if you get into these types of situations, because there are true problems, Ben.
And if you want to call on that person, you call on Andrew Foster at Harvell & Collins Attorneys of Law. Call for appointment at 726-9050 by email, afoster@harvellandcollins.com.